From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Tyler Rocky and Barry Cronin, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
And welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Rocky alongside Barry Cronin on this beautiful Memorial Day Sunday. Barry, I don't think I've done the show in shorts yet this year, but here I am. I am officially kicking it off here on the CDGA Golf Show. Short season, I think, is in full swing now after the beautiful weather we had yesterday and today, and it looks like we're going to have it the rest of the week as well. It is the perfect golfing week out in Chicagoland, and it's about time, right? Like, this is something that we've been waiting for, and I know a number of people are going to be out on the course later today.
Yeah, June 1st is about the date. We're almost there. You got to stay. You know, if you're in Florida, you got to stay till the middle of June. That's about the only way you guaranteed that any good weather up here. It's terrific weather, and we've got a great tournament going on out at the Glen Club, the Korn Ferry event, the NV5 Invitational. It was finally a beautiful day yesterday. That's a beautiful day today for the final. The first 2 days were a little shaky. It was windy and crummy and 50 degrees and windy. You know, and
I was going to go on Friday, but the weather is just, it was such a turnoff for me. I couldn't make it out there, so...
And what was amazing is that in spite of the weather and the wind and everything, the cut was still came in at three under par. So the guys really played well, and they had to play well in order to make the cut out there. And it's a good golf course. And yesterday was a beautiful day to walk around out there. And there were, you know, for the Korn Ferry Tour event, there were a lot of people. So that was really good. You got Davis Thompson, who just graduated from the University of Georgia. Came out there yesterday and shot a 9 under 62, and he and Nick Hardy are in the final pairing. Nick is, of course, from Glenbrook North, your rival.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Nick is 16 under par, along with Davis and one other guy, Harry Hall, who's from England, and he wears a Bryson DeChambeau hat. So there you go. Okay. Yeah, we don't call it a Ben Hogan hat anymore. We call it a Bryson.
It's a Bryson cap now.
But anyway, I didn't mean to. I got off a little bit on a tangent, but it is great. And if you go out there, it's great. You could get in there for free, and it's a lot of fun to go out and take a little walk.
And Nick Hardy, he knows that Glen Club course so well.
Right.
So
yeah,
something
you know
to
what?
Monitor for today.
Yeah, he was in the final pairing last year with Cameron Young. Who, as you know, Cameron
right.
Young was competitive in the PGA Championship and has played really well this year. So a lot of good players out there.
So if you're heading on out to the course today, or maybe you're going to the NV5 as well, give us a call, 312-332-3776. We'd love to hear from you, where you're playing, and what's the scope of the land out there in Chicagoland Golf. 312-332-3776. All right, what a PGA Championship we had last week. I mean, one of the more improbable victories that we've seen at a major. And it's not because of who did it, right? I don't think if you told either of us at the beginning of the PGA Championship that Justin Thomas was going to walk away with it, we would have said, okay, yeah, probably makes a lot of sense, right? But the manner in which he did it, coming back from down 7 shots on Sunday, leapfrogging a couple guys along the way as well to bring home the PGA Championship. I mean, Justin Thomas on that Sunday, he didn't do anything spectacular, nothing that we'll remember for the ages per se in terms of a final round that he played himself, but the way that he sort of navigated through some trouble and really just played a consistent round of golf on that final day, that's all he needed to do, and now he's walking away with his second major.
Right, exactly. You know, it's interesting. He was actually, you know, during the round, he was 8 shots behind with 10 holes to play. And you watch it and you go, how does this happen? You know how you ever watch a football game and replay and you know the outcome? And you go, how in the world did they win this game? You know, or how did they lose or whatever? And this shocking things happen. So yeah, he was 8 behind with 10 to play. He birdies number 9. He made that super long putt on number 11. Remember he made that bomb, right? And everybody goes nuts. But then he pars the par 5, the 15th hole, and you think, well, now how could he do that? But anyway, but then, of course, Mito Pereira, as we know, he kind of held that lead until the very last hole, and he knocked his tee shot into the water. And then there was a lot of debate about, well, should he have hit driver or should he have hit three wood? But those guys always hit driver, you know, no matter what. That's what they do.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people say driver is the easiest club in the bag to hit because the heads now are so big. The ball goes so straight. The ball hardly curves at all.
Right.
And he hits it in the water. And then that obviously complicated matters for him. And you wind up with Will Zalatoris and Justin Thomas in the playoff. So, yeah, it was quite a deal.
It was, and that's the thing, too, with Mito Pereira. He had that lead going into 18, and he doesn't even get a chance in the playoff
right.
at the end, even though he had played three days and 17 holes of great golf.
Right, and the thing is, like you said, he held that lead despite all of his kind of, you know, making bogeys and making weird swings or whatever. He held that lead up until the 18th tee. He came within a quarter of an inch of making that putt on 17, which would have given him a two-stroke lead going into 18. But he missed that putt and just by a little bit. And, hey, man, listen, he played a great round of golf.
Yes.
He played a great round of golf, and I think people really liked him.
And I think
it's really great. You know, a young guy with a lot of game, he made one mistake. You know, that swing, and I think you probably saw the – they finally showed the replay because they didn't show the replay right away. But once you saw that swing, you kind of go, you know, it made me, it's like, wait a minute. That's not how he's been swinging all
right.
day. He kind of seemed like he went a little bit too quick. And I'm no analyst of golf swings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think anybody would have told you that, you know, he just went a little bit too hard at it. Maybe he took a little bit too hard a swing or whatever, and the ball goes in the water. And we know, you know, at that level, at the speed those guys are swinging, if they just leave their club face open like a degree, the ball goes like 50 yards right. So anyway, that's what happened to him. And then the playoff was really awesome. I mean, Zalatoris didn't play bad in the playoff.
No.
But
JT was just that much better.
JT was solid. He was so solid. And I don't know what you thought, but, you know, he's got this relationship with Tiger. So maybe I'm out of my mind. But I sit there and I go, wait a minute. To what extent have he and Tiger talked about this, right? And it seemed like he was just kind of bulletproof in that playoff. His experience came around. That tee shot that he hit off the first playoff hole was just so solid. And then he hits that he had a layup and then hit a wedge in there. And, you know, his wedge game is so good. And he makes birdie. And then he makes birdie on the second hole. And Will, you know, I think Will parred the first hole. And anyway, so it was cool. It was great. And you know what? If you look at that leaderboard that we talked about last Sunday, you go, well, who's the guy with the most complete game? Who's the most accomplished player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you would go down the list, you'd say, well, it's got to be Justin Thomas. You know, he's got the wedge game. Usually he's got the putter. He's got the driver.
He's just got the brand name to him, too.
Yeah, the brand name. And his iron game is great, you know. So I think for the PGA of America, obviously, we talked about it last week. You know, they want a brand name player, right?
Right.
Dan Jenkins used to say, you know, it's got to be your lead has to be Jack Nicklaus, whenever a major championship comes around, because that's the guy you want to win your major. You know, you don't want a guy like Sean McKeel, who you maybe have never heard of. You know, he won the PGA back in the day, and then nobody ever heard of him again. So they don't want that. But I think that, you know, Justin Thomas pretty much. His second PGA championship. He's won a Players' Championship, and I think probably with that has solidified he can get into the Golf Hall of Fame right now.
Right.
So no matter what he does, he could retire next week at 29, but of course he's not. And of course he didn't this week, and he missed the cut.
Yeah.
At Colonial.
So you brought up something there that I found interesting, and it's his relationship with Tiger Woods and what kind of conversations they might be having in regards to all this. And you know what? It kind of strikes me there because I feel like just having a friendship with Tiger Woods is pressure packed in and of itself. Like you probably feel like in that friendship, you're on the final stretch of holes in a major, right?
And you know, he sets the standard for you, and he's the one, like he said in his press conference afterwards, he said, oh yeah, he's probably going to give me a hard time because you know, I missed the putt on this one, and I shanked it on. Remember, he had a shank on number six.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I thought it was me out there, and it was incredible what he did. So he was saying, "Oh, Tiger's going to give me a hard time about this and that." So, you know, when you give hard time to your friends, it's kind of like you're setting a standard of excellence, and that's what Tiger's doing in a nice way. He's not yelling at him, but he's kind of giving it to him. You know,
nowadays Tiger is as friendly as they come on the PGA Tour, it feels like, at least in interacting with other golfers. But he hasn't always been that guy. He sort of had to reopen that door a couple years ago when everything was sort of falling apart with him. And I think that for Justin Thomas, like, getting in the door, I mean, he was one of the first people, I feel like, that of the young crop that Tiger really befriended.
Right.
And that, to me, probably for Justin was a good thing and probably has given him a ton of confidence. And a big reason why he's won two majors now.
Right, I agree with that. It was interesting, though, at the Masters, they interviewed Jon Rahm. And they said to him, "Hey, John, you know, Tiger's being a lot more friendly to the younger guys. Has he given you any tips?" And he's like, "He hasn't given me any tips." He says, "I asked him about this or that and, you know, something on a putting on a green or whatever." And Tiger said, "Oh, yeah, you know, he's just gave him some, you know, lame answer."
Right.
And he said, and Rahm said, "The only guy he's given anything to is Justin Thomas."
You know,
he's the only guy he's given anything to. So, you know, Tiger refers to Justin Thomas as his little brother. Tiger's dad is helping to coach Charlie, Tiger's son. And I think they spend some time together. And I mean, remember when Tiger was injured in the car accident, the updates that we were getting were from Justin Thomas, who lives down there in Jupiter, in the neighborhood where Tiger lives. And even Nota Begay, who's really close to Tiger, you know, Nota lives out in New Mexico, I think. So he's not around Tiger, you know, whereas Justin is. And Justin's dad, Mike, teaches Charlie, as I said, and so I think there's kind of a good relationship there. So I kept thinking, you know, man, he's wanting to channel Tiger Woods there in those last few holes, and then in that playoff once he got in, that was
certainly in that playoff
pretty good. He really did. So, and you know what, all credit to Mito. He's T9 this week at Colonial. Will Zalatoris not playing this week, but Will played great. And and he's got, you know, he's got that weird putting stroke that worries me, you know, a little bit. We missed a lot of the brand name guys, Tyler.
Everything sort of evened itself out, I think, at least a little bit more than what we thought heading into this one. But you look at the final leaderboard, it doesn't look awful per se. Like, there's a Justin Thomas obviously taking it. Rory McIlroy eighth. Tommy Fleetwood made a little charge at the end too to get a top five in there.
Top 10.
Yep. And then Xander Schauffele finishes 13th as well. So and Justin Rose too. But so there were a couple of names that sort of made a little bit of a charge, but a lot of them felt like futile efforts in the end. Like, I texted James Colgan from golf.com last week, and he's going to join us at 8 o'clock. We'll also talk with Lucas Glover today, who finished tied for 23rd. Out at the PGA Championships. But I texted him, and I was like, "Oh, here's this little feudal Tommy Fleetwood charge at the end." He's like, "Yeah, and Justin Thomas is doing the same thing too." And then, lo and behold, Justin's the one that actually held on enough to get into the playoff and then give himself a victory.
Right,
it was quite a scene on that final Sunday.
Yeah, Justin wasn't far enough behind like Fleetwood and McIlroy and everything. I think McIlroy had a lot of regrets. He went off. I think he shot a super round on Thursday, and then he kind of faded on Friday, and he wound up where he's wound up for the last 8 years. He has no major championship, and you know, I think he's probably kicking himself. I mean, it's crazy. Rory McIlroy's like, he's a great player and everybody loves him. So what the heck happened? Like you said, think about all the guys on that Ryder Cup team: Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay. Scheffler misses the cut.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, oh, Dustin Johnson, Daniel Berger. I mean, nowhere to be found. They were like, well, where are they? And here you had, like we were talking last Sunday, about, wow, who are these guys at the top of the leaderboard? And the only, like, quote-unquote brand name who had won one major and won players at the time was Justin Thomas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of a brand name. But I tell you what, he's a brand name to us and to our listeners. But is he a brand name? You could go over and walk down Michigan Avenue at 5 o'clock in the evening and say, hey, do you know who Justin Thomas is? And people give you a blank stare. What? So, yeah.
Right. 312-332-3776. If you're heading on out to a course, you want to give a little shout out to where you're playing, how you're hoping to play, we'd love to hear from you. One of the first good golf weekends here in the Chicagoland area. We will hear from Justin Thomas when we come back. He had a couple of interesting things to say about winning his second major and the improbability of it all. And a couple other people are going to chime in on Mito Pereira and his collapse. And where does Justin Thomas in the world of golf after winning his second major? All that's coming up next. It's the CDGA Golf Show presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Golf is on your mind and on the air right now.
This is the CDGA Golf Show
on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
I can't get out of here without asking an Alabama-related question. Nick Saban has a 24-hour rule.
Mm-hmm.
How long is the Justin Thomas celebrate the PGA Championship rule?
Yeah, I got a 24-hour rule. Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure what Jimbo Fisher's rule is, but I guess he's got to win something first before he figures out his rule. So, I don't know. I'm playing next week, so we'll enjoy it. But at the same time, you know, we're in the middle of a very, very big stretch of this season. So, it's great to be able to spend this time, you know, with my team, but it's back to work.
That's a good little Roll Tide jab for you there. Justin Thomas on PGA Tour radio after his victory on Sunday, and he's still got that Roll Tide pride in him too, which is always good to hear. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. This segment's brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today. Tyler Aki and Barry Cronin. So Justin Thomas is your PGA Championship winner. He now has two majors to his name in his very young career. And he's one of the guys that's just so fun to watch every single tournament. You know what you're kind of getting in Justin Thomas. I know he's, of course, not playing after missing the cut down in Texas this week, but at the Charles Schwab. But he's one of those guys, you kind of know what you're going to get every single tournament out there out of him. And he's always going to have his name in contention. That's what makes him a lot of fun to watch.
Well, he's part of the the younger guy, younger set, right? Mm-hmm. He'll talk to you. He's transparent. He's a good guy. I think he's more transparent than any of them. I mean, Spieth is good, but he's sort of gotten a little bit more into you know, quiet. Mm-hmm. Morikawa's good, but there's another guy, Morikawa. He didn't play great at the PGA.
No, he did not.
I just think Justin Thomas has got a great personality. So I think people like him, and people get to know him even better now. So it's terrific.
So he was asked after he had his immaculate round on Sunday that got him the championship here. Going into Sunday, he had a 1.2% chance of winning. That was the odds of him winning. 1.2% was the odds of Justin Thomas winning heading into Sunday. Here's what Justin Thomas said when he was asked if he knew those were his odds heading into that final round.
I did not know that. I guess you could argue that it should have maybe not even been that high. I don't know. I would say the only reason I had a chance is because there was only six people in front of me. You know, usually when you're seven back, it's, you know, 15, 20 guys. So, usually they get it right, but I got lucky that time.
And that was interesting, too, what he kind of said there at the end. He's only had six or seven guys he had to jump. Usually
right.
When you're seven strokes back, it's a much larger field that you have to overcome, thus making it quasi-impossible to actually win, especially when you only go, three under on that final round, too. It wasn't like he shot some immaculate 65 or something like
right.
that.
Yeah. He was, I think that what the point that they made was that he and Bones and his dad, Mike Thomas, a PGA professional, proud PGA professional, he was only four strokes behind second place. So if you could get into second place, if you could get just climb up a little bit, you know that a guy like Mito Pereira, who was on the Korn Ferry Tour last year, even though he's a proven winner on that tour, and he was playing great, and Will Zalatoris, obviously a great player, but he's never won on the PGA Tour. I mean, Zalatoris has still never won on the PGA Tour. So, and Justin, knowing the pressure of contending in a major championship, he knows, A, how nervous he was the first time he won it. And, you know, you just know how nervous you are in any tournament that you're trying to contend in. So he could, in a way, there's a quiet assumption, unspoken, that Mito's going to have problems, right? And this is not going to be a clear run for Will Zalatoris either. I thought Mito did a great job of just hanging in there. He never kind of gave up the lead until that last tee shot on 18. They were four shots out of second place, and that's, I think, what he looked at. But he also said that he never looked at a leaderboard all day. I'm sure Bones was looking at the leaderboard and not saying anything to him until he was asked, right?
Right. Which, by the way, a little side note here. How about Bones sticking it to Phil?
Well, how about Bones? Exactly. And we talked last week that Phil never gave – it's a tradition – that if you win a tournament as a player, you give the pin flag to the caddy. That's why the caddies always go back and take the flag off of the 18th, off the stick of the 18th hole. But Phil never did that. So obviously Justin Thomas, who's a guy of great character, did it. And it was great for Bones to win. It was very cool, especially in light of Alan Shipnuck's book, which says that Phil owed Bones several hundred thousand dollars. I think it was $700,000, and never paid him, and so that's why he quit Phil, and now he's working for JT. And you know, he made pretty. The payout was $2.3 million for Justin. So Bones, I think, should have gotten. I mean, based on the 10% rule. $230,000 for doing that. So
it's a nice little weekend of work.
And the thing is that Justin Thomas credited Bones for.
Yeah, he did.
He went out on Saturday night when he had shot 74, right, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, and basically thought he shot himself out of the tournament. They went to the driving range, and Bones just gave him a hard time and said, listen, you've got to stop beating yourself up, right? You're playing great. These are tough situations and tough conditions. You're playing great. You got to be a little bit easier on yourself. And I think as golfers, you think about it. When you're out playing golf, average players or great players, we all do the same thing psychologically, right? If you're a 15 handicapper out there and you hit the ball bad, which we do often, you know, you're mad at yourself. You're denouncing yourself. Your self-esteem is crushed, right? And you got to be a little bit be nicer to yourself, and that's exactly what Bones told him, that, you know, you're a great player, you're playing great, and you just got to give yourself a break. So, and Justin Thomas credited Bones for saying that and for giving him that great pep talk on Saturday evening.
So Todd Lewis, you see him on Golf Channel. He talked a little bit about something that you mentioned a little bit earlier, Justin Thomas's status in the game and what this second major did for him.
I think Justin coming from seventh back, and he was eight down at one point in that final round at winning. I mean, that's the greatest storyline. He's a lock now in the Hall of Fame if he wasn't before. I mean, if you think about it, guys, I mean, he was seven back. And if someone said, hey, Justin, you're going to go out and shoot 67, which is just three under, it's not like 63, and you're going to win, and if someone told him that at the beginning of his final round, he would say, you're nuts. But you know, he was able to do it. Hats off to him. And like I said, I think he is now, if he wasn't considered an elite player, which I don't know many people who would consider him non-elite, he is definitely in that category now. He even said so after his round when I had a conversation with him. I'm at another level with this second win.
that second win is so meaningful.
Oh yeah,
too,
the second
to all
major,
these guys
for sure.
And because like, and Justin even talked about it a little bit too. Like, anyone can get hot for a weekend, right? And just go out there. Their game really suits the course, and it's just right place, right time. Everything sort of falls into place. But getting that second one is such a validation of your status in the game, especially for someone like Justin Thomas, who, yeah, everyone kind of thinks of him among the elites, but I don't think people think of him as a guy among the elites who, at the time, only had one major to his name.
Right. He had one major and one players, which is players is a big deal, too, because they have right. really the best field. But, yeah, 100%. And when you, the other thing is, when your only major is a PGA, we talked about it last week.
Right.
PGA is kind of the most minor of majors, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like three quarters or a half of a major. It's probably three quarters of a major. So when you win your second PGA, that's like, okay, you won. It's almost like winning one, right? Or winning one and a half majors because, you know, it's not a U.S. Open, British Open, or Masters, but I think that second PGA is very validating. And when he wins the Masters and the U.S. Open or whatever, which he's clearly capable of doing. I mean, he could win the British Open too. I mean, that'll be another validating point. But yeah, I think that second PGA was really important and has already elevated his status in the game. And I think really importantly, he won at Southern Hills, right? And mm-hmm. he won in those conditions. I mean, that was a really tough major to win.
You went through like four seasons of weather 100%, out there at Southern Hills.
100%.
Which you do not expect in Tulsa, Oklahoma in the middle of May.
Right. Normally when the PGA has been played at Southern Hills, it's been played in August. And it was last time it was played there was 2007 and when Tiger won. And it was like 95 degrees and miserable. This was, you know, as you said, you had to be a man for all seasons to win this major. And the golf course was a quality golf course and a great setup, very challenging. And it gave the guys opportunities on Sunday to kind of catch up on the back nine to make it exciting. But I think Justin proved himself and for sure he's reached that elite status. And now I think, you know, he'll go in, you know how it is when you watch, live from the U.S. Open or live mm-hmm. from the Masters, these guys on Golf Channel sit there and talk for 3 days about who's going to win. And then they never mention Mito Pereira, right? They never mention right. the guy. So JT's name has been in that mix for quite some time, but now it'll be in it more. You know, yeah, he's definitely an elite player.
When we come back, we will hear a little bit about Mito Pereira, what happened on 18 with him, the collapse, and really he had the PGA Championship in his hands, and he let it get away from him on the 18th. We will hear a little bit more on that. And also, what's going on at the Charles Schwab? Do we have Scottie Scheffler potentially making another run at a PGA Tour event? We'll get into all of that and a little bit more coming up next. This segment sponsored by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today.
How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
Here are your hosts, Barry Cronin
and Tyler Rocky.
It's the CDGA Golf Show. This segment's brought to you by Geneva National. Experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. Alongside Barry Cronin, I'm Tyler Rocky, talking all things from the PGA Championship, and we'd love to hear from you as well. 312-332-3776. So one of the big storylines that came out of the PGA's was the collapse of Mito Pereira down the stretch, and it got into a big sort of question, topic, debate of Mito on 18 pulls out his driver. He goes in with a lead. All he has to do, I believe, was bogey, and then he wins the PGA Championship. But what happens? He goes out there on 18 and puts his drive into the water, And not only does he not win the PGA Championship, but he doesn't even put himself into the final grouping that gets into the playoff at the PGA Championship. Right. It felt like a lock at a certain point when he stepped up to that 18th tee box, but clearly something got to him on that 18th tee. But this brings up the question, should he have pulled out the driver in that situation? Because, I mean, I think you and I talked about it a little bit over the course of the week, but he could have hit 4, 5, 7 irons and been good.
Well, I mean, I think he had to make, I mean, he had a one-stroke lead. So, you know, he had to make par. I mean, and, you know, Justin Thomas or somebody could have made, or Zalatoris could have made birdie.
And Zalatoris had a big putt on 18
right,
as well.
Right, 100%. So, people say, well, should he have hit 3-wood? And I think Faldo was advocating 3-wood. But Faldo always advocates old school stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. Faldo always, you know, always is saying, oh, these guys shouldn't hit their lob wedge. You know, they should hit a little punch and run, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, get your 8-iron when you're in front of the green and punch it up there like we used to do back in the day. And the guys don't do that anymore. They take a lob wedge and they put it like 2 inches from the hole because they're so great. Oh, they practice their lob wedge 6 hours a day, right? So these guys, they're going to hit driver no matter what. First of all, there's an argument to be made that with the driver head being as big as a waffle iron now, the sweet spot is so big that the driver is the easiest club in the bag to hit because there's so much as a sweet spot. Number one. Number two, the golf ball is made now so that it doesn't curve. It doesn't really go right or left. You have to really try, right? You have to be, you know, you have to be really trying to hit it. And obviously, he's not trying to hit it. He's trying to hit it straight.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hit your driver, it's a pretty good chance that you're gonna hit it straight. You know,
right? And he had hit driver each of the prior 3 days.
Absolutely.
And was fine.
100%. So why would he change his strategy there? And then let's just say that he did change his strategy, right? Let's say he hit 3-wood, okay? And he hooked it a little bit, or he did something wrong and something got into his head when he was standing, oh, I'm hitting my 3-wood and I'm gonna be safe, right? Faldo always says, oh, for safety.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so if you're gonna be safe, something's in your head. Right,
yeah.
Your strategy has changed. Your mindset has changed. Your emotions have changed. You'd maybe rather go up there, do what I've been doing the last 3 days. Do what I do that's put me in the lead. And he's probably hit driver on the other 13. I don't know, 13 holes that where you're supposed to hit driver.
Right.
So why wouldn't he hit driver? I don't necessarily think he made the wrong decision. It's easy. You know, for us, we're in the peanut gallery in the sports radio talk radio gallery in the analyst gallery to say, oh, he should have hit 3-wood, but if he hasn't done that in other situations, even on the final day, he really can't, right? It's not logical for him to do that. He's got to stick with what he's done, and that's what he did. So, and unfortunately, you know, he left the club head open about 2 degrees, and the ball went in the water, which was rough. And then he had a tough spot where he got a drop, and he couldn't get on the green and all that, so he had a hard time.
Michael Breed, who you'll see on CBS, also Golf Digest, does a lot of work there. He was on PGA Tour Radio, and he was talking a little bit about Mito's collapse on that 18th hole and how, really, it wasn't the club choice. It was more of a mechanical issue that he saw with Mito.
Agree, 100%.
But if he hits a driver in the fairway, which, I mean, who knows? Different circumstance? I mean, that golf swing, I don't really care what head was on the end of that stick. That golf swing would not have hit the ball in play. It just wouldn't have.
Right.
Now, would it have gone into the hazard with a 3-wood?
Oh, it could still reach with a 3-wood.
There's no knowing. You don't know what sort of side spin is created. You don't know whether it was a solid contact. You don't know any of it. What you know is that he and his caddy made the decision that they thought was the right decision in order for him to be able to win. And he wasn't able to execute the shot. And we've seen many, many times players with less experience and players with more experience – fail just as Mito did.
So, yeah, really it was just a bad swing. I mean, you look at the mechanics of what happened. It was not the golf swing that we're used to seeing out of what we had seen from the prior 3 days and 17 holes of Mito Pereira.
Yeah, I mean, when you looked at it and you go, I mean, I remember looking at it going, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you don't have to be an
expert. They were scared to show the replay for the longest time, too.
They didn't show it. They did not show it for a long time. And I'm like, well, where's the replay? You should be showing that replay right away. He looked like he had some sort of an attack, you know, like in his body. Right, that wasn't the same body that executed all these other strokes for the rest of the tournament. It was a herky jerky motion to that final drive, and that's why he didn't. And look, you know what? There were people. You get nervous if you have $5 on the line, right, on the 18th hole, or any kind of pressure, competitive situation, whether there's money on the line or not, and you have to hit the ball in the fairway. You know that even as an amateur golfer, obviously, it's hard to do, and as a pro, it's hard to do.
I mean, a multi-million-dollar drive.
Exactly. But you know what? It doesn't. Whether it's multi-million or it's just you playing against your buddy, and you got to make this just to beat him,
right?
Just to win a match, and there's nothing on the line. Maybe there's not even $5 on the line,
right? Just for pride's sake.
But just for pride, and you go, and there you hit it. And so everybody who's listening to this, who's ever had the least bit of pressure on them to hit a golf shot, understands exactly what Mito was feeling. And you know what? It's tough. It's not easy. And it's not like he's never won. I mean, last year he won three times on the Korn Ferry Tour. And he got what they call a battlefield promotion to the PGA Tour, right? So, I mean, he's an accomplished player. And we heard last Sunday when Joaquin Niemann, who was a countryman from Chile, was sitting there saying everybody wanted to be Mito when they were younger, and they idolized him because he's obviously such an athletic guy. I mean, you look at him and you go, man, this guy's an athlete. You know what? Everybody makes mistakes. It doesn't diminish him as a player. It just says, hey, you know, hopefully he can put himself in contention again. This won't be a one-hit wonder type of thing for him, and then he can learn. Look at how Zalatoris has learned. I mean, he's managed to finish second at the Masters, and every major he's in contention.
Right. So. Yeah. All right. Let's give away a CDGA starter pack. How about it? All right. So here's what you're going to get. You're going to get a CDGA towel, a Blackhawks towel, a sleeve of zero friction distance balls, a CDGA hat, divot repair tool, and a free Jersey Mike sub. All of that bundled into one here. Be caller 10 right now. And there's a twist to it, too. Tell us where you are playing either today, yesterday, this week, what you have planned. Be caller 10 right now and give us that information, 312-332-3776. We will hear from the winner next and also give you a look at what's going on around the CDGA as well. This segment has been sponsored by Geneva National. Experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. The CDGA Golf Show will be right back.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Barry Cronin and Tyler Aki.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
Beautiful morning in Chicago. A great day for golf around the Chicagoland area. This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. We're going to talk to James Colgan from golf.com in a little bit, all things PGA Championship, as well as a little bit of insight as well into the Manning cast that was put on as well. A different little spin on golf on TV. We'll talk to James coming up in about 7 minutes from now here on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tullymore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. So we were calling for caller 10 to tell us where they're playing or where they have played as of late, and they are going to walk away with a CDGA prize pack. Tim is in Ukrainian Village. He is caller 10 here on the CDGA Golf Show. Tim, what's going on? Where are you playing?
Good morning. Yesterday, I played out at Old Oak in Homer Glen.
Okay.
And great hidden gem. Not many people play out here, but a very tight, old-style course, a lot of trees. Good time, fully crowded every day.
Wow. And how did you shoot?
Not great, but 88, which is...
Okay.
I'm a 12, so not too far away. A lot of very thick rough out there. All this rain we've had is really what made the course come back pretty lush.
Right, yeah. Well, Tim, we're going to put you back on hold. You have won a CDGA prize pack. We're going to give away another one of these. But congratulations, Tim, and best of luck in your next golfing adventure as well. 312-332-3776 if you want to hop on in. We'll give another one away around 8:25, 8:30 or so. So be sure to be listening to the CDGA Golf Show then. Actually, it's funny. He said, not a very good round for me at 88. I was talking with Jesse Rogers yesterday, and he was on this station with Peggy and Dion yesterday. And it's that rare Friday off day, not just for the White Sox, but for the Cubs that he had. So he, of course, gets relieved of any of his baseball reporting duties for that Friday day off. It's beautiful, right? You don't get a lot of Fridays off in baseball. He went up to Strawberry Creek and he shot a 120, and he was not very happy with his performance out there. Sorry to out you, Jess, but you did share that earlier, and then I was busting your chops a little bit when I saw you at Guaranteed Rate Field yesterday.
Well, you know, better a 120 than not getting to play at all.
That's true.
And the good thing about a 120 is you probably hit you hit so many shots that there's a better chance that you've hit maybe 20 sort of semi-decent ones, right? So you had 100 bad ones. And of course, the 120 includes the seven penalty strokes that you made.
He told me he lost 12 balls yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know.
So there's 12 strokes.
These things happen, and hopefully he's got that bag of used golf balls that he bought for $50, 100 for $50. But, yeah, it's a problem. But you know what? 120, at least he's out playing. And I think when you play bad, it gives you an incentive to play better. I think the problem for most people is that we don't play enough. We don't practice enough. We watch TV and we see the greatest players in the world. And we kind of measure our own game. They make it look so easy, yet they practice
right
6-7 hours a day, and you know, it's just, and they've been playing since they were 5 years old, so it's not easy. And you know, a guy like Jesse, who's working every day in the summer, running around, going ballpark to ballpark and going crazy, I mean, there's no way he can play great.
Yeah.
But you know, and his 120 is another guy's 88, so
right.
It's all relative.
Let's zip through these calls real quick. Mitch is in Des Plaines. Mitch, where did you play? Where are you playing?
Tyler, I am going over to the golf center of Des Plaines.
Okay, oh, nice. Wow. Little driving range there. I love that driving range, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. As Barry just pointed out, I have no business going out on a course today. So it needs to go over there, get on that driving range, get some practice in first.
Mitch,
I can always embarrass myself next time I go out.
Right, well, Mitch, exactly. You know, they have that sweet little, nice little par three there that you can
exactly.
play.
You play at night, too.
It's a really wonderful place. Rick Jacobson, the golf course architect from the Chicago area, designed that course, and it's really terrific little course.
Let's get on out to Arlington Heights, where we find Randy. Randy, you're on the CDGA Golf Show.
Good morning, guys. I'm heading over to Arlington Lakes Golf Club, another little hidden gem. A little short, but tight, challenging.
And didn't they just do a little renovation out there?
They did a renovation a few years ago, and it's handling the water great. The course is staying open while a lot of other courses are closing because of the rain.
That's terrific. It's we have a hard time with some of these courses that flood. But now they're getting taken
care of. That's what these renovations did. They do a great job at containing a lot of the flooding. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from James Colgan from golf.com. He's going to join us on the show, talk all things PGA, all things golf on TV, and also a little bit of the U.S. Women's Open, which is coming up next week. That's next on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tullymore Golf Resort, up north Michigan golf without the drive.